hearing one speaking. What did you notice in the background? A continual hum.
So I'm present in radio, much to the relief of my speaker. Sorry, Teresa, we're just too tired to have a baby.
Lots of things going on. I'll give you an update as to Eustace. He's running around madly in Los Angeles trying to make connections. We did make the connections with Scott, but he had taping sessions, and these are tapings that will be presented as a priority function and centerpiece in a European setting. If he couldn't find the people, he would try to wrap up his introductions and things at the Federation seminar, and they would be here. I believe that will not happen. It is at least a week premature for my purposes of having him here with you. So we're just going to roll with whatever comes our way. You're in a great period right in here of change. Not necessarily you ones in this room, but as the adversary begins to pull down the New World Order, you see, California is the first on the list. Don't for one minute think that this is an accident that has happened in Los Angeles. So I think we better talk about that a minute. And prior to talking about that, I want to tell you that there was another one scheduled of major proportion in San Francisco this day. But things aren't working well. You have to have a situation where you can test what you have set up. And you have to have a methodology behind psychologically forcing people to do what you want so they think that they are forcing the elite into doing what is needed. And it's not working well. They chose a lower economic level of habitat in the Los Angeles area, but they're running out of little new faults that they have created. And you see, they'll tell you, oh well, this was a little shallow slippage fault. That fault is so cotton picking deep that they've never even drilled down into it to recognize its presence. But they managed to activate, but they were also seen activating it. Dummies. They think that they are so clever by doing this in the night, but laser lights are easily seen in night. They would do better to just go ahead and do it in the daytime. But you see, that produces a lot of other problems. And the purpose of this quake was to handle the largest masses of people. Sheeple. This is really sheeple. This is a real test of the sheep society and the fleecers. They took out every major inlet of the city. They botched up traffic until it is incredible. But they've isolated the city, basically. Oh, some of you who are around here know how to get in and out. But by and large, they can close that city from both sides. And they're prepared to do it. They have reduced every thoroughfare out of there to the capability of just one or two officers stopping all flow. I'm going to repeat. California is to be the first organized, workable New World Order state. And because we've got a lot to cover today, I'm not going to go into it deeper than that. Watch the contact. We've got the documents now to back it up. And they're shocking and they're painful. Now, what happened was they were going to roll over this earthquake into a like situation in Oakland and San Francisco area. They would devastate a small fault near the Hayward and the San Andreas, and we could wall that city off, tear up its freeway system, and by limited explosion, take out many of the major hospitals in one swoop. The ideal time to produce a trial run is in the wee hours of the morning, where you have actually the least amount of physical damage, because part of what is trying to be proven is the management of the masses of people. So look what they've continued to do. You continue to have, right up through last night, pretty major aftershocks, 4 and above. Those are damaging to already damaged property. And it continues to keep the people totally on edge. You have to pay attention to the little bits and pieces of news. Even the ones where the people are out in the park and they put up their little tents and the idiots bring a helicopter in and blow the tents down. Miserable. They knew there would be an earthquake. They say they knew there would be one because obviously there's going to just be one. But it's strange to note that they had barracks, tents in readiness. How about that? On Monday. And the National Guard said they were ready. Let's go put them up the next day. Yeah. And your governor and the elite military said no. We want those people in the shelters that we have designated. Only what happened? The people refused to go. So all week long, where these people could have been in shelter, they withheld the tents. They are telling ones that it will be 3 weeks in many instances before they can even be interviewed. People are donating food, but you see, they still are making it difficult for ones out in those park areas to get anything. Come on over to the facilities we have provided, and we have beds, food, etc. And this is where you will be interviewing. So what did they do? They provided buses to take the people to these other areas, and the people refused to go. They will. They will go. But it sure did make a mess of the plan. But you see, the elite have to know this. All of you should have been tuned in to hear Reardon read down the list of rules and regulations and laws that he could now and was at that moment pulling into executive order. And then note that the majority of the military enforcement crews changed from police department to ATF black. But the mayor of Los Angeles, in the presence of the other dignitaries, read right off the rule book under which executive orders and emergency regulations he was taking action. So Los Angeles became an area under martial law, under emergency FEMA regulations, all of the things of the New World Order. Now, when word spread out there that there was to be a duplication of the LA action in San Francisco on this weekend, they got it botched up again. And the word spread like wildfire under the community underground that from Caltech there was speculation of another major quake on Sunday in Los Angeles. Well, that may or may not be, but Katie Hutton and her crew all had to rally and say, we don't make predictions. So the underground got the wrong town. Now, there are several of your earthquake prediction persons from the lighter side of nature telling you this, 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 and this. Well, that's good, because now they can call it off. These ones are wrong, and until these ones understand that what they are picking up as pre-detonation signals are man-made, not God-made. And as quickly as one can be influenced into happening, it can be influenced into not happening. And then no one in the future will listen to the predictors. You are in flux. And when they are ready and you squeak by the skin of your teeth. And this is now running around in all of the intelligence community immediately, following strict regulative order in Los Angeles, then moving on to San Francisco. Whammo, the entire fault from south to north would go. You had areas of Washington State, Seattle, and Tacoma, and Portland, Oregon, without power for longer than you had places in Los Angeles without power, my friends. They didn't have earthquake activity. They had man-made blowouts. It gets harder and harder to predict because they can turn off something if it hasn't yet gotten underway. This is serious. It is time for you ones on the coast to get out of there. John. If we can move along here, we can assist in that to some great extent. There are members of family. It's not as simple as just picking up and moving out. But some of you are in more dangerous areas in that place than are others. And when they pull the entire fault line, it's going to be devastating. You can see what happens to the city, even if you are not hurt. This was little. But it was big enough that there becomes the stresses and the pressures put against the major faults along the plate. And enough other pressure is being brought to bear both politically and through nature itself shifting. The Japan is just sitting there like this too. And I want to tell you, when Japan goes, it is going to be incredible. And they're like you. You have become a luxury nation. They have become a luxury nation. What do you mean, get ready? If I get caught, so be it. God meant it. Well, good luck. God didn't mean anything except for you to use your brains. And so each one will come into some realization of what is important to you. And if you have no massive responsibility, then you can take a little longer. Just know that it's underway. And that you have no way of knowing time. It's just seriously time to begin to think of getting away from that coastline. There's something extremely important that I want to share with you. And I appreciate you ones making an effort to get a television up, because this was just done this morning. And since we were going to hear, I was hoping, from Eustace, mostly regarding the judicial system, because he has a major suit filed, and we fully intend to help him through the Constitutional Law Center with that. And through that, we can pull in some pretty powerful people into the law, etc. But the major problem that you face right now is the fact that there are workings afoot to impeach Clinton. Now, that would ordinarily sound really good, wouldn't it? Except you know what an idiot puppet he is. What would replace him? Bad news, right? On the other hand, if you had neither of them, what would you do?
Speaker of the House.
So just to wish it were not that way is not a solution. A lot of things are underway, and it is requiring a tremendous amount of my time. While we also effort to do some of the other things that you will need in a transitional period, plus trying to deal with our friend, all these lawsuits, and our people are getting tired. Well, we're going to just push it just a little bit farther. Ask you for some more patience. God is not going to come and sprinkle it all over you. So it requires great stewardship. And that means that the ones in the highest responsibility in my service are going to be even busier. And the rest just has to keep rolling as best it can. I'm going to make an effort this week to write about cartilage and carbergia. I believe that we have enough membrane now to offer it separately. And you need to know why it is of value. I've written about it once. But as you release it to the public, there needs to be a little bit said about its value. And then I'm going to ask you ones to do the labels and make these other decisions. I am moving Dorma right out of that business. All of it. I mean all of it. This is going to be a bit of a political rally in that I'm not interested in politics at all. But this morning there was an interview for an hour with Ross Perot on C-SPAN. And I had Dorma tape it simply because it is an excellent overview of at least where he is. Do I endorse Ross Perot? No more than I did at the time. Is he some wonder man? Just the fact that he's still around is a wonderment. But he does express what you need to hear. His hometown was Texarkana, Texas, on the Texas side. It's a borderline town between Arkansas and Texas. Small little place. And this is where the interview took place. There are several things I want you to take note of as we go through the tape. The fact that even Ross Perot cannot buy media time. Most of the questions will deal with Perot's organization. One of the first things when EJ gets the word that I want purchased for this room is a very, very large screen television. For two reasons. I would like this room to be able to be used through the weeks, in the evenings, as you once wish. You can watch movies, you can watch films that are sent here. I would like for you to see things like this, and I would like it to be from a screen large enough that it's comfortable. I want it on a flatbed some way so that you can roll it out of the way. I would like for you to have a refrigeration unit in this room where you can keep Guyalite available. And for you popcorn eaters, I would like for somebody to go down to Smart and Final or wherever is required and get a popcorn machine. Let's begin to utilize our facilities for something that is also pleasurable socially. Mr. Green refers to this place as the Ecker Cult. Well, the Ecker Cult is made up of a group of two. So, I think they have not been successful. And since I am now represented as being dead, that was the latest one pronouncement from a visiting friend, was that the word is out. Hatton is dead. So whether you're listening to a dead man through the Ecker Cult or whatever, let's go for the popcorn machine, shall we, while we're on a roll. And if we can arrange it, we'll get George to pay for it. Now, do we want to discuss these things from George first or last? I think I'll... Well, all right. I feel I must share some of the things because they are subjects now of depositions. It's as it comes closer and closer and closer to a head. It is imperative that all of you non-cult members know what's going on with this cult, because I've got to get them busy on other things. And that means that some of these other, these albatrosses around the necks have to be relieved. Mr. Green is efforting to sell the books in mass. The ones with a lien on them from Chuck in Denver. He doesn't seem to let up on his tirade. It wasn't, however, a most interesting deposition taken by USNP's attorney on Tuesday. It was a more interesting hearing with Mr. Horn on Thursday, and I believe we have an interesting one coming in the morning in Mojave. Catch them if you can. You actually missed the most delightful one that we have had in a long time, as Judge Wallace had intelligent words to use on Mr. Horn. If we have time after this, maybe we'll get Rick and Jean to share some of those. So now if somebody would operate this, let's just listen to this interview. I'll try not to interrupt, and we'll discuss it a little bit afterwards.
Yeah, Princeton is the operator, and he's about to do something.
So we can't
operate.
Turn it on.
I don't think the video's in.
Oh, okay. John, the video's right down there below. That's it.
I wonder what
would have been a flop of an operator. Be a flop operator.
Mr. Brill, what's your plans for United We Stand America from 1894?
Well, we're now organized. We have elected our members, leaders, in every congressional district, in every state in the country. That was a huge undertaking. That's done. We will meet shortly and plan 1994 with all of our elected leaders from across the states. And we will be totally focused on government reform, campaign reform, getting discipline on government spending. Our people will be very active in trying to get voter awareness and involvement in every race in the House of Representatives and every race in the Senate. See, the entire House is running, a third of the Senate is running. And we will have debates and do all the things that we historically have done to raise the level of awareness and have maximum participation by everybody that's eligible to vote. So that'll keep us busy for 1994.
Are you going to have candidates in the district? Nowhere.
Yeah, we don't have candidates. We want to make sure that every candidate gets wide exposure and has an opportunity to deliver his or her message. So that when people go in to vote, they're not voting based on one-minute blips and things like that. They've really been exposed to the issues and long discussions of the issues.
You've been quiet for a long time now, ever since the NAFTA debate. How come?
Well, I haven't been quiet. We've been busy getting organized. I had finished going to all the states, which was a huge effort in this past year. And so all of my time and energies have been spent in getting organized.
What's your reaction to the kind of coverage you've gotten since that debate?
Well, there really hasn't been any coverage.
When people say that was kind of a downer for Ross Perot and that the polls started going down after that, what's your reaction to that?
Well, everybody is still living based on what, the Beltway sends out to the country. And that is a weakness in our system. We didn't have a debate. This was we didn't discuss NAFTA that night. This was a carefully planned personal attack aimed at me. I was allowed to be interrupted 30 times during that debate. So anyway, it was my time to speak. I wasn't allowed to finish, and so on and so forth. Just one of those things. As far as Grassroots America is concerned, as far as our members are concerned, that has no impact. That's just another event. The debate has been cast as a factor in the NAFTA vote. The debate had no impact on the NAFTA vote. We continued to pick up votes in Congress after the debate. The thing that swung the NAFTA vote was when they opened the Treasury and bought the votes. Just plain and simple. We don't feel that's appropriate use of taxpayer money. That's the way it was done.
Would you do that debate again if circumstances were the same?
But I wouldn't be so naive. I would make sure that we had a format where each speaker was not interrupted. I would make sure that it was a format where the moderator had agreed that we would talk about the NAFTA issue and not just tell little folk stories.
Okay. You think Larry King did a bad job?
No, I didn't say that. I don't say that at all. But I'm just saying we should have a clear understanding that it was going to be a debate and not a variation of crossfire.
Mark Meyerson was quoted somewhere saying that he's known you for a long time, that he had never seen you and with that demeanor that night. Did something happen? Some click in at one time for you?
No, I don't know what that. I have not heard that statement.
Bobby, and do you know him?
Yes.
What happened?
I have no idea.
Did you see his news conference?
No.
Did you read about it?
Yes.
What was your reaction to what he said about the columnists and Bob Dole and Bill Sapphire and things like that? You've been through that.
Well, it's a free society. Everybody's entitled to say whatever he wants to say. And Admiral Inman, let's look at the facts and the record. Admiral Inman has a distinguished record. Admiral Inman is brilliant. He has made a 30-year major contribution to our country. I have no idea what all of the factors were that caused him to reach the conclusion that he did not want to be Secretary of Defense. But I do think it's very important that everybody keep in perspective because this is not just a tricky game here. This is a man's reputation. This is a man who has contributed a great deal 30-some-odd years, who is a fine citizen in our country. And you'd have to find out from him, you know, what his thinking is, because I don't know.
A couple of weeks ago, the Clinton aides came out with statements like there's a cannibalism going on here in Washington, and this was regarding things like the Whitewater case. Did you see those comments, and do you agree that that's what goes on in Washington?
I didn't see the comments. I did see comments from the White House staff saying, can't we at least have a truce during his mother's funeral? I feel very strongly that that would have been appropriate, not to continue the barrage during a period of grief. But let's just get past the way things ought to be and just say this: if you're involved in political activities, I think it's just part of it.
What about the Whitewater situation?
I don't know anything about it except what I read in the paper. I am concerned that every time one of these things comes up, it's a huge distraction for months. By definition, now I think we have a wonderful choice of special prosecutor based on what I read. I don't know Mr. Fisk personally, but it sounds like he is a fine person and will do a thorough and impartial job. But it will take months, and this will be a distraction for months. We have work to do here in the country, and I just regret that we have this major distraction, but I guess under the circumstances, it's being dealt with in the proper way.
Is anybody overreacting, in your opinion, either the press or the...
I don't know enough about it. See, all I know is what I read in the paper. It's not as though I know anything about Whitewater that everybody else doesn't know. I just don't know.
What are your instincts, though, in a society like this? Should we go after the president and his family like this?
I wouldn't, but that's just one person's opinion.
Why not?
You see, maybe I just don't know enough about Whitewater. But I think we could find something to have an extensive investigation about anybody, because no human being is perfect. If we want to run the country just totally focused on negatives and sensationalism, then I'm afraid that we will diminish the effectiveness of our government. And I think there's a high probability that the people who contribute the most will not get near this whole process because it is so unattractive to a person's family. Forget the person, think of the family. I think part of Admiral Lindman's message was he didn't like the idea of subjecting his family to all this. And that's, if you exclude the most talented and able people in the country from public life because of the brutality, if that's the right word, of the process, we hurt our country.
Assess the president's first year.
I don't do that. I leave that up to the American people.
Are we better off today than we were a year ago?
I'll let the American people decide. It's not my job to sit here and keep score.
You've been involved now for the United States of America organization since it was a year old, January the 11th?
Year old, yes. And I've been involved in public life now for about 2 years.
In those 2 years, what do you assess your own involvement? What impact have you had in the last 2 years?
Well, time will tell. I think, without any question, I'm incidental in the process. It's the millions of people who got involved that have an impact. They have had an interesting impact. We now at least talk about having discipline around spending and talk about the importance of balancing the budget and paying our debt. And we don't do it, but at least we started talking about it. The Clinton economic plan never balances the budget, never gets the deficit increase in 1 year down below $200 billion debt increase in 1 year, 1998, then it takes off like a rocket, goes back up to $400 billion in the year 2003. That's before we pass health care. We have a lot of work to do. We've got to have a balanced budget amendment, in our opinion. We've got to have a line item veto, and it's got to be real, so that the president has the option of getting rid of the poor. We've got to do a whole series of things to put discipline around spending, because right now it is fun and fashionable to promise and spend, and nobody seems to remember that the money has to come from somewhere. And nobody seems to remember that this money finally comes from taxpayers who have jobs, and the amount of taxes they pay are a function of what their job pays. If I have a job making nothing, I don't pay any taxes. If I have a good job, I can pay some taxes. The most important thing to do is have our people at work and a strong, growing tax base in our country so that with discipline on spending, we can balance the budget, pay down the debt, and not leave our children the mess we're leaving them now.
Got the front page of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. There's an article here by Jennifer Lynn, Knight Ritter, Tribune News Service, and the headline is GATT Scan, meaning the General Agreement of Tariffs and Trade. Trade pact means taxes, and the lead on this is most taxpayers don't know it yet, but the landmark World Trade Agreement that was reached last month will cost them as much as $20 billion over the next 10 years. Why don't we know?
Because we don't get all the facts. There is this, in the establishment, for lack of a better term, there is this great enthusiasm for making all these trade deals. We have a history of being out-negotiated badly. Now, we were certainly out-negotiated badly in NAFTA. We should have a trade agreement with Mexico. It should be a fair trade agreement. We should have these GATT trade agreements. They should be fair. We just get out-traded, but that's an American tradition. We give away the store, and as we do that, see, 2 million jobs have already gone to Asia. 500,000 jobs have gone to Mexico. These manufacturing jobs, best-paying working jobs in the country, the people who have these jobs are making $440 a week. If they have a job now, they make $270 a week. A person making $270 a week does not pay as much taxes as a person making $440 a week. A person out of a job pays no taxes, pays no Social Security, is on welfare. So it's a triple hit to the economy. And then the fourth factor is everybody who still has a job has to pick up the slack and pay more taxes because of the debt. If you... So we perpetrate myths. See, Smoot-Hawley did not create the Depression. Smoot-Hawley was not passed until 6 months after the Depression started. If you look at what percent of our gross domestic product, our gross national product, excuse me, was shipping goods overseas, it was tiny at that point in time. That would not have created a Depression in this country. the Federal Reserve shrunk the money supply by 30%. And most students of the Depression now say that's what really triggered it off. They just sucked the money out of the economy, and banks didn't have the money, and so on and so forth, and the rest was history. But we still have all these cliches and buzzwords like Adam Smith and free trade and so on and so forth. Fair free trade, fine. But there is an unlimited supply of people in this world who will work for 25 cents an hour. There's an unlimited supply around the world of children who will sew clothes for less than that. Malnourished children, I might add. We ship all our jobs to the cheapest labor in the world. We will eradicate the middle class in this country, eradicate the tax base, and we'll have a very different country in 10 or 15 years.
President, in a year-end interview, said that NAFTA was a magic moment for him, of all the things that happened during the year. How did he get it done? Why weren't you able to stop it?
The only thing that, well, let's look at what had no impact. All the former presidents came out for it after, that had no impact. Then you had the Secretary of State and other officials come out for it. That had no impact. Then you got Lee Alcopian. That had no impact. Then Mexico sent $30 million worth of lobbying money out there. That had no impact. Corporate America had $30 to $35 million in lobbying money. Wanted to go to cheap labor. That had no impact. President Salinas did an hour interview explaining that to the American people. That had nothing was working.
How do you know that none of that worked?
Because I was up there walking the halls of Congress, and it was just like a zero. We had to vote. NAFTA was dead because it was not in the interest of the American people. Then, in a very pragmatic way, and I believe improperly, they opened the Treasury and bought the votes. They got 234 votes in the House. And he just